a smile. You'll know this old world is a grateful after all. Smile, Danya, smile.
We're going to talk about smiles during this hour and what the smiles of the presidential candidates or other politicians is telling us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, October the 25th. We are going to be talking with a psychology professor at UW-Madison who is an expert on human emotions and emotion-cognition interaction, and she is currently involved in researching the smiles of the candidates in the presidential campaigns. We will welcome your thoughts and questions for her at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Paula Niedenthal is a psychology professor at UW-Madison, and she joins us in our studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why are you researching smiles?
In general, the study of facial expression of emotion is an important one. It links to a number of social behavioral outcomes, and it's related to certain kinds of atypical development and other kinds of problems, both purely disease-based and other kinds of social problems. So we study smiles because they're one of the probably most nuanced, and smiles seem to be related to different emotional states.
It's not, if we smile, we're happy. Isn't that what we usually think?
Well, not necessarily. Smiles seem to be expressed under a number of different occasions with a number of different motivational underlying reasons, and they seem to be both controlled and not controlled. That is intentional and automatic.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us what, you are in the midst of this research, and as a part of that research, you were watching the presidential debates.
I was watching the presidential debates, and I noted the relationship to my research. One of our research model suggests that there are possibly three fundamental types of smiles that are used to solve three fundamental social tasks in evolutionary history. One of them has to do with rewarding other people's behavior, so that's the smile of enjoyment, the smile of pleasure, and we do it to have people do it again, whatever it was that caused the smile. But we also look at smiles of affiliation, smiles that don't come necessarily from a feeling of I'm happy, but I'm connected to you, and I want to show you that, or I want you to accept me, or I want you to be closer to me. So it's a sort of social bonding function. And then there's sort of a third smile that may not come from the good place, and that is smiles that manage social hierarchy. So we're not going to eat each other up, but we're going to let people know that I recognize that you think I'm in a lower position to you, or I want you to remember that I'm in a higher position.
So what kinds of smiles were you noting in the debates?
I saw a lot of different kinds of smiles. It depended on the debate as well. I felt that, as I noted on Facebook and got a lot of reactions to, that in the first debate, President Obama was struggling to remain polite and upbeat in light of what he later says were things that he wasn't expecting or a presentation that he felt was ingenuous or not reflecting past behavior, whether or not that was his impression. And I felt that he was putting on what we call a masking smile, where you say, this is outrageous, and I'm just going to smile through it. It looked like it was effortful. He was not looking at the other candidate. He was not looking at Mitt Romney when he did that. So I would call that a masking smile. That's an intentional putting of the smile on your face.
Ah, so he was, that when he kept on saying after that first debate, I didn't recognize that Mitt Romney, he was hearing things that he didn't expect to
hear.
That's
what he said. What his impression was, then his feelings would have been of outrage and disdain, and yet needs to smile, so that's effortful. I didn't see, whereas I thought that Romney and Biden both expressed a lot of what we would call smiles of dominance, where they had information or certainty about things, they were wanting to send signals of superiority, of potentially sort of disdain to the other person. Those might have not come from a positive feeling or happiness at all, not even an enjoyment in their superiority, more like a sort of aggressive stance. But that doesn't mean that was ingenuous in any way or inauthentic. I think they had authentic feelings of dominance at certain points. I think people show a lot of toothy grins in that situation. And I wasn't surprised by that. I think if you think about the social and interior feeling of those two candidates, for example, in the first presidential debate and the vice presidential debate, the sort of toothy, superior, dominant smiles that Romney and Biden both showed at certain times were also not a surprise. I was surprised at how much was made of them, actually.
Yeah, interesting. So I was going to ask you, what is an aggressive or dominating smile? And it's mainly a toothy smile?
We don't know all of the features of those kinds of smiles. When we look at them, we're about to. We've been doing a lot of research on what constitutes those smiles. There can be a relationship to the look of pride in which the head is thrown back and the chin is lifted, which is really useful because when you lift your chin, you look like you're looking down at somebody. Yes, there is a question about teeth. Showing your teeth, it sounds fun because it sounds like a Kodak smile, but it also has to do with signaling your prowess and your ability to be aggressive.
Ooh, showing your canines.
Yeah, and in fact, what we've already discovered is that affiliative smiles often have the teeth covered. So you might just sort of smile and actually pucker your lips a little bit around your teeth while you do it, which is an interesting thing. It may be, you know, the rest of our research will show this to be true or not, but it may be that affiliative smiles actually are smiles in which the teeth are covered.
Well, here's my non-expert impression. When I look at someone's smile, be it in the debates or anywhere else, if the smile doesn't match the eye, do you look at that? I mean, sometimes what I'm saying is that if there's a smile on the face, but the eyes don't have that twinkle, or the eyes have a piercing glare, that they need to match up for me to think this is a genuine I'm happy or I'm happy you're happy smile.
Right. We do know something about the role of the smile of the eyes. It's not always the case. It's that it has this meaning, but a lot of times smiles that are and the reason is because some people can actually do it intentionally or in a masking way. But in general, what we think of is if the eyes are crinkled with crow's feet, this is called the Duchenne marker. It's the muscle around the eye that's contracting, that we feel like that person is expressing actual positive feelings and actual positive emotion towards somebody else. So there's something about eyes. The sparkle sort of thing, I mean, nobody has really gotten that, but it's true that you do look at the eye and you look at sort of potentially more than that muscular contraction. I don't really know much about it yet, but we all have that feeling. And if you looked at the upper part of each of the candidates under different situations, the upper part of their face, you know, they weren't having pleasure. They might have had an automatic smile. The smile might have been a real smile in the sense of having an important meaning, but they were not experiencing happiness. Yeah. That's true.
So the first debate, you were seeing the president with this masking smile, mm-hmm. Because maybe he was hearing things he didn't expect. And you saw a dominance in the smile of Mitt Romney in that first debate. Did it change in the subsequent debates? Did they show different smiles that indicated a difference, I guess, in position in the debate?
It's interesting. Two things changed. Obviously, they were coached later. They were coached on a lot of things having to do with nonverbals for the final debate, which I thought was really interesting. And in fact, there was a lot of coaching involved at all. So that's another reason not to draw too much. I thought that the social context changed so much that it did, in fact, affect their smiles. In particular, in the second presidential debate, a lot of the responses were directed at somebody. So, you know, the president or Mitt Romney would say, "Well, Barry, here's what I think." And they were bonding with them. Sometimes there were affiliative smiles. Sometimes they were enjoying themselves because they, after all, are politicians. And sometimes they enjoy talking to other people who are potential constituents. So what was really most important, I thought, was the social context. So they were no longer faced with the same either commentator or, in fact, studio audience. It wasn't really the same. They were talking to one person versus the other candidate versus the whole group. And so, for one thing, I did see different smiles because they were having a one-to-one connection with somebody who was not a priori attacking their view.
Yeah. You mentioned Joe Biden's very toothy smile in his debate as being one of dominance. What about Paul Ryan? Did you notice anything with him?
Yeah, he's interesting because, of course, there are some things that are just stable about a person. And one of the things that is stable about Biden is his teeth. I mean, he has a particular face that did attract the camera and attracted a lot of attention. Paul Ryan I thought, had some masking smiles, but what's interesting about him is his forehead. So his forehead wrinkles a lot in a way that you wouldn't expect during a smile. Sometimes the insides of his eyebrows knitted together and went up as in distress occasionally, and that could be have been a response to Biden's clear assertiveness and, you know, almost aggressiveness. The insides of this of the eyebrows knitting and going up is related both to sadness and distress. And Paul Ekman has suggested also to lying. And I'm not at all suggesting that he was lying in his content. But there could have been times when he was feeling distress over the interaction. But I would hesitate to say that in part because his face does that a lot. Like there's a lot going on with his forehead. So I wouldn't really draw any of these conclusions.
No,
he looked sad or distressed a fair amount on the upper part of his face.
I'm very self-conscious now because I know that I knit my eyebrows together a lot. I've got big wrinkles there, but I always thought that was concentration.
Oh, you're thinking about it going forward and down. And I'm talking about the insides of the eyebrows going up.
Oh, okay.
And like the, sort of knitting together as in sadness, as in a puppy dog.
Oh, I see. This kind of...
That's right.
Which, of course, listeners
nobody can see.
It's a little bit of a disadvantage here, talking about smiles on the radio, but you watch the debates. You watch people's faces. We welcome your questions about the different types of smiles, perhaps, that you noticed and what they tell you, or any questions you have for our guest, who is... researching smiles. She is Paula Niedenthal. She is a psychology professor at UW-Madison. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What did you think of all the smiling going on during the debate? How did you interpret them? Checking our weather forecast for today. Cloudy and mild with periods of rain. Also some areas of patchy, dense fog. Highs today will be in the 50s and low 60s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 7:30, we are going to resume our series of candidate forums. We will be talking with the Democratic candidate running in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, Pat Kreitlow, the former Democratic State Senator from Chippewa Falls. He is challenging the Republican incumbent in the 7th, Congressman Sean Duffy. Congressman Duffy declined our invitation for an opportunity to appear and answer your questions. But we will hear from the Democratic challenger, Pat Kreitlow, coming up after the news after 7:30. Right now, we're talking about smiles. We're talking about what the smiles of the presidential candidates tell us about what they're thinking. We're talking about what smiles in general tell us, facial expressions. Our guest is researching this. And Professor Niedenthal, you're not finished with your research. These are just impressions from these debates.
Right. I mean, I'm telling you what I felt as somebody who's been looking into smiles sort of closely. And our research is not designed to diagnose anything about the actual political candidates. We saw the set of smiles as sort of representing the three categories that I talked about, that people can have at least three different motives for smiling or three different underlying emotional states. And this, extracting these smiles and looking at them using software that helps us recognize facial expression, and in particular, recognizing the contraction of each of the possible muscles on the face, helps us to understand the situations that lead to particular kinds of smiles. It allows us to isolate the particular muscles and then argue that, in fact, there are at least three different kinds of smiles. And that's not just for our amusement, right? It's not going to be the basis of the next song. It has a lot to do with understanding misunderstandings of facial expressions, misunderstandings of signaling, how people might better explore the face and get its actual meaning, how people interact in international relations, why certain facial expressions work and do not work in negotiation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook comment from a listener named Carol, who simply writes, "Romney doesn't smile, he smirks." So what's the difference between a smile and a smirk?
Well, we have a lot of words to talk about smiles, right? And it sort of depends on what part of the face that you're looking at. we're going to extract the smiles from the debates, meaning that we're going to extract facial expressions in which a particular muscle, which is always present in the smile, is contracted. So he does other things as well, as they all do. And what's interesting is that if you're looking at the top part of Mitt Romney's face, it doesn't including his eyes, it doesn't have the signals that you were just talking about, Joy, that, mm-hmm. that seem to indicate happiness. So when this writer, or that when this person in the audience is saying that it's a smirk, sort of, it's two possibilities. One is she may not be looking at what I would call a smile, and the other is she may be looking at the top of his face and saying, I don't see any happiness in it. And I think that is, that's a reasonable perception on her part.
I don't know how to word this question, but I'm guessing that Carol is not going to be voting for Mitt Romney. And I'm wondering if partisan feelings influence her saying that that's not a smile, that's a smirk.
Yeah, I think we already know that the attitudes that people have towards somebody else affect how they even take away information from the face, whether they even look at the eyes. She might have actually not even been looking at Mitt Romney's eyes, because we focus completely differently on the person that we like or who we're going to vote for. We already know that. That's just like a scientific fact. So we're exploring the face differently, and then we're responding it to ourselves differently. When you look at somebody who you're not going to vote for, guess what? You don't mimic their facial expressions. That is, you don't resonate with their feelings, and that means that you're less likely to be accurate about them, or you may actually preferentially focus on feelings that you don't like or confirm your sort of feelings about the person already. So there is no question that one of the things that I noticed coming out after these debates was preferential interpretation, preferential looking, preferential interpretations that are consistent with people's prior partisan views.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at some of your impressions here from some news releases and write-ups of your research, or your ongoing research. President Barack Obama was concealing outrage or disdain. That was from the first debate, that he was concealing outrage?
This is what I saw, was that his smile reactions came from claims by Mitt Romney that he later thought were misrepresentations of his views. And my guess, I mean, that's why I'm surprised that people make so much about this. Mm-hmm. Both of the candidates were trained extensively on what the other candidate believed and how they should respond to it. So when Mitt Romney said things that Obama was not expecting him to say, or did not have reactions to, that were well coached, just like Mitt mm-hmm. Romney was well coached to do that, then what you have is, holy smokes, you know, are you kidding me? So it was, when I say disdain and outrage, what I mean is, are you kidding me? You're saying that and now I have to do something, is what I saw. I saw, yeah, strong negative affect covered up by a smile, in the way that you would have strong negative feelings because you saw that your child is very badly injured and you don't want to freak them out so that you smile. That's what a masking smile is.
Okay, so that's the masking smile, that's yeah. concealing that. Yeah.
yeah.
And the difference between that masking smile and maybe smiles you saw subsequently from President Obama in the other debates, or maybe in campaign experiences, you know, campaign appearances, what kind of smile is he generally sporting?
Oh, it would be hard for me to say that, because I haven't seen him in any situation. I did see him on Bascom Hill, though. I think that all four of the candidates have the possibility of making smiles of enjoyment when they are in that context. And so what I really see is that the smiles are appropriate to the social context. So all of them, when they are with people they like, make what I would consider to be enjoyment smiles. When they are appreciating the people, don't necessarily like them or have feelings, sort of affiliative smiles. So if you look at President Obama with people he's enjoying, saying things that he likes about being with his wife, then he expresses a lot of enjoyment smiles, you know. Mm-hmm. But they, to the extent that I've seen them, all of them are capable of doing that. And certain Biden's face attracts a lot of attention when he makes any kind of smile, in particular enjoyment smiles and dominant smiles. He has because he has white hair and white teeth and has a angular face, he attracts a lot of attention. We're spending a lot of time looking at that. And, you know, judging it as appropriate or inappropriate, it's not being sensitive to what was going on in the debate. So I was less concerned about that representing, that being his smiling and laughing, representing politeness or impoliteness. I thought that both of them developed a very confrontational and almost a ping pong game of smiling, and confrontation, you know. Yeah.
We talked about Mitt Romney's aggressive or smile of dominance. You also referred to it as a threat grin. That's the same thing?
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, think about masks that people have made over the millennia, really. I mean, if you can think about masks of showing smiles but expressing threat. That's what I sort of use. Threat grin is what a sort of a different word that I use for dominant smiles, in the sense that the smile is showing teeth. It looks like a smile in terms of certain of the muscles involved, but it's coming from a very aggressive or threatening place, and that's why we call it that.
We have short on time, and we have a caller waiting. Julie in Cameron is with us. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. I just wanted to thank your guest for answering a question for me that has puzzled me ever since I've been married. My husband always makes this strange smile sometimes when we're having a discussion and he's kind of trying to win his side. And he makes that, I now know what it is, because I've often thought it was, wow, why are you looking at me like that? That's ridiculous. And he was trying to make that kind of the threatening smile, like with the teeth and the, you know, and now I know what it is.
Oh, so he was trying to show dominance in your conversation, Julie.
Yes, exactly. Now I know he came from a very physically and emotionally abusive upbringing, and so I'm sure he learned that, you know, as a self-defense mechanism, or is carried into in his adult life. But now I know. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Julie. We have just a minute to go. I don't know. What conclusions are you drawing from these debates, or where's your research going from here?
I guess I would say that we can't draw very strong conclusions from the debates. What we can do is we can use it as a really rich data set to look at people's smiles. And we would probably, unlike some of the analyses I've seen, want to wait to see what the science shows us. So I guess people should put their faith in the possibility that we can really look at this more systematically and objectively, by the way, since the partisanship cannot be revealed in the way we're going to analyze the data, or at least it can't bias the way we're handling the data. And, you know, wait patiently and think about human interaction and the way smiles might be used differently during them.
So maybe we can talk again when you're done.
I'd love to.
All right. Thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me in.
Paula Niedenthal is a psychology professor at UW-Madison. She is an expert on human emotions and emotion-cognition interaction. Thanks very much to Bill Martins, to Amanda Magnus, and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. Thanks very much for listening. Stay tuned. We will continue our candidate forums coming up after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.